Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Welcome back. The month of zero availability is over.
For now.
Another one may come, but that one is over.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I lived out of a suitcase this past month.
Yeah.
You saw me maybe less than half the days of the month.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
But I hope our listeners enjoyed the second outtakes bonus, enjoyed the in syndication series.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I took an excuse to listen to those old things. Well, Eschatology and Genesis isn't that old, but the other two are from 2017.
Dang. Yeah, I've never listened to those. I have no idea what I said on those episodes.
You did a very good
job. Did I do a good job? Oh,
yes.
Good.
Yes.
I hope there are some people out there who have discovered new podcasts now.
Sure, yes.
And are going through the backlogs and exploring and learning about the cult in the woods.
History Honeys and Sex Archie are both out there for people to discover and enjoy, as well as Shelved by Genre and the Range Touch Network, who commissioned Eschatology and Genesis.
Yes.
Happy second birthday to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something that I posted when it went up, but forgot to mention while doing the intro, at the end when like the outro's playing and I'm giving all the cast and production credits,
yeah,
I mention you are the host of the upcoming
Whiskers
We Share Knowledge Regarding SeaQuest.
We did
that. That was a title announcement. That was a sneaky title reveal.
That was a sneaky little, hey, this is coming. If you're listening this far, you get to know this before anyone else.
So it's part of Whiskers history, Eschatology and Genesis.
Yeah. Also, that History Honeys episode is the first time we recorded a podcast after we got Moki. Our little co-pilot here, who I have put in lap jail because she keeps trying to sit under our rolly desk chairs, and she's gonna lose a limb.
Yeah. Maybe at least a toe or two.
At least a toe or two.
Yeah.
Because my God, she just sneaks under our butts. Just appears. It's like the fucking Shining.
But I would like to talk about something even older than 2017. I'd like to talk about something from January of 1993.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about it was your birthday.
I mean, my birthday is even further back than that. But
yeah.
Not by too much.
By a little bit.
But just a little bit.
It was his birthday, though. You should tell him happy birthday,
people. It was. I share a birthday with Michael DeLuise. Different years.
And Cole Sprouse.
Yeah, but he's not relevant to this show.
He was for In Syndication.
That's true. But in January of 1993, a revision, an addendum of the SeaQuest DSV Season 1 show Bible was published and distributed to all interested parties, right? Freelance writers, production staff, the network, everyone who would be find use of having this document. And I don't want to go through the whole thing. You can find it at the SeaQuest Vault. It is 79 pages.
Fuck yeah. Someone should print that off. Use your work printer.
Have
a great time.
And, you know, there's a Season 2 one that I'm sure we'll revisit in time to come. But I just want to talk about the very first page, the first page of content after the title page.
Okay.
And just talk about how successful the show as it eventually was at following these points. Because this is still a very, very early document. Dr. Westphalen, that role doesn't exist yet. It's three separate characters that have yet to be combined into one.
Yeah.
O'Neill is a woman when you get to the cast breakdown in this document. So let's just start with some guidelines at the top. Number one, SeaQuest is not science fiction. It's only 25 years in the future. Think of it as science fact or science future. Use your imagination, but keep things grounded in reality or likely probability. No aliens. No kelp monsters.
Oh, yeah? Yeah? Really? Okay.
I mean, they break the rule. Specifically the no aliens part, very, very direct.
Yes.
In one of season one's best episodes.
Yeah. Or
certainly most memorable.
Yeah.
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 That was great.
Yeah.
They broke the rule.
They did. Also, there's no way to not think of it as science fiction. Like,
I wonder what they meant by science fiction. Because it is. This is a story that is facilitated by possibility, by speculation. By tech that does not exist, that could plausibly exist.
In the future.
That's the idea, but it doesn't.
25 years is still in the future.
By a political situation that doesn't exist, but is plausible, I guess.
Yeah, it's...
An ocean-based world government is still very strange. Just as a concept.
Maybe. But it's science fiction.
But it's science fiction.
It's science fiction. They're trying to be like... Is that their way of being, like, not Star Trek?
I think it is code for Star Trek.
We are not Star Trek.
I think it's code for Star Trek, yes.
Don't channel Star Trek.
I think season one stuck mostly to this. Mostly. But here in season two, we are in the land of kelp monsters.
Without actually having a kelp monster, but yeah.
No, we had flowering plant monsters. Very different.
Very different.
Completely
it's
different.
Not kelp.
Yeah.
They should have had a kelp monster. Why didn't they?
Point two. Make sure the stories are about people. Yes, it's an adventure series. Yes, we need action and excitement, but it's also a character show. We need to care about someone or about a group of people or about a relationship.
Lucas and Bridger.
Lucas and Bridger is locking that down.
Lucas and Bridger.
But this, I think, the show has been very good at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Greed for a Pirate Dream is about those people's weird fucking relationships on that island.
Yes.
Like, the episode we're here to talk about today, I don't think has good relationships.
No, like, but it has relationships.
But it is all about relationships.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a SeaQuest episode that isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Point number three, the shortest point. Bridger must always drive the action.
We moved away from that one.
This one, I think, is a really big season one, season two difference.
It is.
That we have not spoken directly about.
Yeah, but that's a big difference.
Just seeing it in black and white, it really jumps out at you. It's been a long time since Bridger drove the plot. Bridger exists as... Like, the wise grandpa of the ship that everyone goes to for advice. He's everyone else's hologram professor in season two.
Yeah.
For large stretches of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't drive it.
He doesn't drive the action. It's Dagwood week. It's Piccolo week. It's Ford week. It's been a long time since we had Bridger week.
Yeah. It has. This is true.
But season one, I think they stuck to it pretty... Like, there's exceptions.
There's exceptions, but it was more... It was the majority.
And that's not even counting the episode where, like, he was literally phoning it in because he was doing a film shoot. Like, that's a different thing. Set that aside. Number four, always look for opportunities for humor and heart.
Yeah.
Krieg gang!
Paella Boys.
The Paella Boys.
Yeah.
Big source of the humor and heart lately is the Paella Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they got it. The even-numbered points they got.
Yeah.
The odd-numbered points, they waver in season one and veer away from in season two.
Yeah.
So that's the top half of the first page. The bottom half is an overview of how SeaQuest scripts should be structured. While every episode can and will present its own individual exceptions, the following is a template for a SeaQuest script.
Okay.
A storyline is to involve the use of the SeaQuest and crew, focusing on the uniqueness of her design and capabilities. If any old tug can handle the problem, why send her? This is a season one, season two difference I've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
I've repeated myself a lot on that point. That's not true anymore.
Why are we on land so much?
In this episode, the Sequest exists to ferry someone who doesn't like to fly.
But also...
Literally any boat could do what they do.
That's not the only thing they're doing, though.
Sure.
They also have their task, which only they can do. They have to start it because they're the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... It's
although while those plots collide in the beginning, that's the B plot, not the A plot.
Yes.
It's still a divergence from this rule that isn't so much a rule. It says right in it, it will have divergences. Okay. Captain Bridger's involvement in the A story is critical. Just discussed this, 2 minutes ago?
Yeah.
He is the human heart and soul of the ship, and the audience rides his shoulder throughout the hour. The mission should ideally present him with a moral as well as practical quandary. Not just can we suck up this giant oyster bed, but should we suck up this giant oyster bed?
I mean, yeah. We should. That's a good question.
Screw those oysters.
No, I mean, we can, but should we?
Dr. Ian Malcolm, yes. One advantage I think you get out of moving that focus around and then spreading it across the ensemble in season two is everyone gets to have a heart and soul.
Yes.
Dagwood has a bigger heart and soul than anyone because, well, Dagwood has a bigger everything than anyone. He's a very large man.
He is.
But if Brody was a season one character, I don't think we would be as involved in his life as he is here in the season two format.
That's true.
For example, Crocker. There you go. Proof in the pudding right there. Next point. In addition, we will feature two or three frontline regulars in the A story along with Bridger, their involvement being organic and natural in the crisis/mission. This will allow the audience to learn more about and grow attached to our characters. In practice, I think this point is just Westphalen and Lucas over and over again, almost to the exclusion of everyone else. Sometimes it's Ford in season one.
Sometimes it's Ford. Ford gets some moments, but yeah, pretty much. And Krieg. Like, then you got some Krieg and, like, yeah.
I think we're about to talk about where Krieg lives. B storyline to involve one or two regulars with personal dilemmas.
That's Krieg.
Which that's ideally Krieg. Feather into the A story via morality and tone, if not circumstance. Especially Krieg and Hitchcock B plots.
Yes.
Which that one writing team really loved.
Really loved.
Yeah. And then, where possible and appropriate, we will utilize a C story. Think of this as a runner, focusing on the lighter side of our characters and life aboard the ship. Again, Krieg gang, hashtag Krieg.
It's like Ortiz and O'Neill doing something in the background. Yes.
Ortiz has really filled in that part of Krieg's place. I think we said it toward the beginning of the season, but now, having talked about most of season two, it's only become more true.
Yeah.
And especially Ortiz and O'Neill as a double act.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it would be useful to look at where the show started before it started.
Yeah.
And now that we're getting toward, and now we have so much that is divergent from it in an interesting way. I think, you know what show follows that structure so much more strictly than even Sequest DSV Season 1 did? Babylon 5.
Haven't watched it. You've been watching it without me.
My current work lunch break show is Babylon 5, and it specifically using the capabilities of or not so much the capabilities but the political position of the station, centering their commander and his staff in every A plot, and then. Which regulars are going to get the B plot is absolutely how Babylon 5 works 100% of the time.
I will take your word for it. Because I have never watched that show, surprisingly. Not even one episode.
I will say, Sequest, both seasons, does a better job of giving its cast that heart and soul that this page is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Season 2 especially, because that seems to be its... its point, its new ethos, its big advantage over season one. But the cast of Babylon 5, at least up to, what am I at, 16, 17 episodes in, of a five-season show, right? There's a lot I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. But to this point, the characters exist to be points of view for ideologies and positions in a political space. And what warmth and life is mostly coming from the actor and a little like, let's throw something out, let's have a gag. It's not that there's zero on the page, it's just not the priority of what's on the page.
Now, do you think I would like Babylon 5 now, or would I have really loved it back when?
There's no conflicted little blonde boy with an issue about abandonment. So I don't know what you would have latched on to.
That is not a thing of every sci-fi show I watch.
No, but we're also watching the OC together, and that's absolutely...
But Ryan is so great! Like, you gotta love the fact that he, like, says nothing but expresses everything.
Yes, yes.
There are 20 emotions that happen in, like, a split second, and you're like, oh my god, poor boy is so conflicted. He has so much anxiety about saying words.
But it's time to talk about what we're here to talk about. The name of the game. The episode of this week is Season 2, Episode 16, Watergate. This is written by producer Patrick Hasberg, whose most recent scripts are Higher Power and Special Delivery. That's the Dagwood murder episode.
Mm.
Directed by Casey...
The highs and lows there.
Yeah. Directed by Casey O'Rourke in his only... director credit, not for Sequest, but his entire IMDb page.
Oh.
He's primarily a TV editor.
Oh.
He edited 9 Sequests, 20 Doogie Howsers, 6 X-Fileses, including one that got him an Emmy nomination.
Hey.
9 Boneses. Also, theatrical films, including She's All That and From Justin to Kelly.
Oh, God. Let's remember that movie while we're here.
I like one of those. I've seen one of those.
Yeah.
I might like them both. I don't know. I haven't done the research.
It's been a while. I gotta get back into the routine. I'm like, how do we start? Okay. Ford. Comes down some stairs.
Yes.
That's what he's doing.
Into the hallway. And he meets Ortiz and they speak directly to this week's opening segment.
So Ortiz is complaining about the duty he's been assigned, which he's like, he's been told that he has to escort this musician who's coming aboard to go perform at the station, this military station.
Doing a UEO show, doing a USO show for the UEO.
Yes. And Ortiz is so not into it. He's like, when I signed on to the Sequest, I thought it would be about science, not entertainment.
Just, can you hear the sound of them winking at the audience? Can you hear it? Because Commander Ford responds, when it's not about science, it can be very entertaining.
What the fuck?
I had my reasons for holding that until now.
Yeah. So Ford also is like, hey, buddy, it'll be okay. Your family's in entertainment. And Ortiz is like, my dad's a TV repairman. Which I would like to point out for these writers.
Yeah?
It's interesting that they thought we'd need TV repairmen in, like, 2019. Like, do we? Yes. But, like, that's not a thing anymore.
Yeah, I think the TV repairman kind of went out with the cathode ray tube.
Yeah.
Now you just, like, wait until there are enough dead pixels that you just get a new one next Black Friday or whatever.
I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, the type of stuff that used to have repairmen for, it's now more expensive to get it repaired than to just buy a new one, which is insane because, you know, capitalism and shit.
Yeah, but yeah, that's not no way to...
Environmentalism.
Exactly.
So maybe that's why. It's because the UEO is supposed to be more environmentally friendly, sure, so they still sure. have TV repairmen.
But Ortiz's other objection is that this artist's music simply is not to his taste.
No, he's not a fan.
Not a fan of her hippy-dippy kumbaya love the world nonsense.
Yeah, apparently she married a tree.
She married a tree. She doesn't fly because airplanes eat birds, apparently.
She's like a vegan.
Yeah, yeah.
Ugh.
Speaking of the OC, Shailene Woodley.
He can say all of this about Shailene Woodley, and like, it sure, dude. Like, I get it. She's fucking weird. I think that's why she disappears in the OC, is because she discovered spring water and had to go harvest it all the time. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't available for filming.
She had to ground her ions by running around barefoot, and yeah,
yes,
okay,
yes.
So again, going back to the sequest structure, that's our A plot. It's time for the B plot.
Yeah, so in addition to, like, escorting this musician to Solitaire Island, which I swear for the first, like, two scenes of this show, they say solitude, and then they say solitaire.
Neither is real. This is a fake place they've made up.
But Lucas is weighing the island.
Yes!
That's his job right now, is to weigh the island. That's not actually an island. It's a mountain, it's tell us.
The island is really, really heavy. It is so heavy that it is slowly sinking into the seabed, which is causing irregular seismic activity.
Yes, it's very unstable in the area.
Mm-hmm.
What the Sequest is there to do is to core it like an apple and then laser scrub it inside and make it lighter.
We're going to make the mountain hollow it out.
So that way it stops sinking and stops like causing earthquakes and shit. But it's going to take a long time. They're just there to like get it started because it's actually going to take like 100 years. And I'm like, I'm curious, what are you starting then? Like, how much are you going to... Are you just sending, like, Tony out there because he has gills with a little, like, chisel?
Well, no, don't be silly. They're going to send Tony out there because he has gills with little flags to mark.
Oh, he does the spray paint stuff. Yes. Like, watch out for the water line.
It's rising. That's the rising, problem. Yeah. The thing's sinking. Piccolo is in this scene, and he has this long monologue about how we're all gonna die anyway. Like, the universe is expanding, and eventually there'll be a big rip, and then all of life is forfeit, so nothing matters.
Yeah. And they all look at him. And he's like, yeah, I tried to use that to get out of homework, too, and they didn't buy it. But what if Tony actually does believe that? What if he's just walking around every day? What's it matter? The universe is gonna kill us, isn't it?
Because life is finite, it is meaningless, and therefore I'm just gonna wander around and go gambling, I guess.
Make jokes. Not take life too seriously.
There it is.
This is the core of Tony Piccolo.
We've solved Tony Piccolo. It's right here.
He's having a crisis over the world ending, and that is why he is the way he is.
The most existential of Sequest cast members. We must imagine the Gill Man happy.
You would think it would be Lucas, but no. It's Tony. Yeah.
So meanwhile, in the launch bay, Ortiz is there to meet his guest. Why is the sensor chief in charge of their VIP? Who knows? Ford is just pranking his bud, I guess.
Yeah, he like Ortiz beat him at poker or something, and he's taking it out. He's like,
I mean, I don't think there is anyone who it should be their normal job, because they don't have a Krieg.
True.
So it's got to go to somebody. Eeny, meeny, miny, Ortiz, sure.
Is it because they're like, hey, it's least likely Ortiz will try to, you know, hook up with the lady? Is that the hope?
Well, that was a bad call.
That's the opposite. I mean, they couldn't have sent Tony. Tony would get charged with harassment.
Because as soon as the bay doors open, revealing Guitar Lady, all of Ortiz's like objections and hesitations and complaints melt away. He's immediately smitten.
With serotonin. Serotonin!
That pun. Serotonin.
Did you catch it during the show or just now?
Just now!
Oh no, I caught that during the show and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ.
This makes a later joke in the shower scene make more sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, there's a shower scene.
She is solo, no entourage, carrying her own guitar case. Acoustic, thank you very much. How long is this trip? How many days is she journeying on this sea voyage to and from performing a UEO show for the UESO show for the UEO faithful? Because she's just carrying a half full shoulder bag.
Yeah, these people pack so fucking light.
She should at least have like show costumes, right?
Is the like hidden fact of Sequest is that they do have like Time Lord technology? And all their bags are bigger on the inside. Are they all Mary Popping it?
Don't be ridiculous. They do have replicators, though.
Oh, maybe that's it. Like, she doesn't need to bring clothes.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You know what it is? She heard that everyone who goes on the Sequest gets a jumpsuit.
She's counting on the jumpsuit.
She has her performance outfit, and she was thinking, I'm going to wear jumpsuits the rest of the time.
Yeah, they're so comfy.
I'm so excited. I'm going to have, like, 12 jumpsuits. It'll be great.
So
they didn't tell her they discontinued the jumpsuits for guests.
Serotonin here is played by Dawn Robinson, member of the legendary girl group En Vogue, shortly before she left them to join the R&B supergroup Lucy Pearl. This is one of her few film or TV roles as a named character rather than as herself, or roles like model in Tank Girl or girl on corner in Batman Forever later this year.
Well,
so what do you think of Dawn Robinson's performance as a novice actor, at least in film and television, but a very experienced performer?
She can sing.
Yeah.
She only emotes like one emotion.
It's not a fair question when she spends at least half the episode in a coma. You know?
True.
She's not given the material.
I mean, no. But, like, her performance is a very mellow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when
she's no regulator.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's no Scully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe that's a choice, too, because you have this whole thing of where Ortiz has this picture of what she's going to be like because of all the rumors, and she's the exact opposite. So she's a very mellow, down-to-earth, chill person.
Yeah, the point of her, the bait and switch, is to be the most normal woman you've ever met in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say, because you were like, shouldn't she have show costumes? No, she wouldn't. She would perform exactly
she's
in what
she's just showing up in the
jeans and a tank top.
Yeah.
Very 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Very 90s girl with an acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
The problem is she can't have the white girl dreads because she's not white. She's black.
Yeah.
that's the big signifier she can't have.
If they had cast a white girl, I know exactly the type of 90s, like, hippie girl look they would have given her.
Yeah, I was going to say they might have given her the 10 things I hate about you instead, but no.
No, it would have been far more like Rianne from My So-Called Life.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is on TV right now.
Yes.
It's very current to the time period we're talking about.
Yeah. So Ortiz is immediately smitten. He's like, oh man, she's pretty.
And not what he expected.
No. And he's like, you know, I've become a really big fan of that song of yours. And she, you know, the one with the thing. And
it's got that guitar bit in the middle.
And so she names a song. He's like, no, not that one. Oh, this one is... No, not that one. This one? Yeah, that one. That one's not mine. But good try.
Trapped. You got trapped. So they're hitting it off great. Meanwhile, the science team...
Yes. Lucas and O'Neill... talking about Data with Tony and Brody. I think Brody's there.
Yes, Brody is in the science plot and entirely checked out. He does not care. I think he just wants to shoot the big laser drill. That's all. That's why he's hanging out.
He was just hoping he could hit the big red button.
Yeah.
Tony was too. That's why they're hovering and like science. Rock, I like paper, science.
Scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors.
And Lucas is like, absolutely no, I'm hitting the big red button.
Mm-hmm.
But Lucas has been looking at the data, and the figures from his data is telling him that the mountain is hollow.
Yeah. Not just hollow, but an artificial pyramid that has accreted so much rock and debris over the centuries that it looks like a regular mountain.
Yeah, but instead it's just a really, really giant fucking pyramid. Because it's the size of a fucking mountain.
Mm-hmm. A mountain twice the height of Everest if you follow the slope all the way down to the ocean floor. So the great question is, who built it?
Oh. And now it's time for credits. So when we come back, they filled Bridger in on this. He's like, what?
How can it be a pyramid? It's the size of Manhattan. And Lucas corrects him, it's the size of Ohio. I don't think that it is.
I think that might be a little inaccurate.
If you were to have a pyramid, the footprint of Ohio, we would not be talking about twice the height of Everest.
No.
The number would be many times larger.
Maybe he's just trying to be dramatic and not
I hope.
Yeah. And so they're, you know, having a little back and forth about it, about what the data's saying and how, like, things are coming back, like, you know, kind of unknown, like it's man-made, but like, or we don't know it's man-made, but it's not something you find in nature, mm-hmm. and it's really old, but the carbon dating keeps coming back, like, inconclusive, which means it, like, probably predates time and shit.
an actual thing Lucas says, I'd say it predates time, Captain.
He's a little dramatic today.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it was covered in stuff, so I guess he thinks it was covered in so much stuff that it made a planet? It goes down to the core of the Earth?
Predates history. I know what that means. I know something older than the written word. Okay. But predates time? It is the point around which the entire Earth accreted.
Because the dirt just stuck to it.
But even that is not older than time. That's just an accident that happened.
Well, it was floating around before that.
Yeah, the Big Bang happened around it and engulfed it.
And what we didn't know is that the Big Bang was sticky.
It was very sticky.
It was kind of like honey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why everything stuck to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Carbon dating is for, like, organic material. Never mind.
There's flaws in this.
Season two, baby!
So our good buddy Serotonin is practicing in her room, composing a song, mm-hmm. as Ortiz brings her a plate of food. And she's like, oh, thanks!
It seems to be mostly fruit.
It looks like there was an unpeeled banana. Like, he went ahead and peeled her banana for her? A little weird. I don't want anyone peeling my bananas. I'll peel my own, thank you.
Thank you very much. You're a strong, independent woman.
Yes.
Yes.
Also, don't touch my bananas. That's gross. Like, you're going to squeeze it? Like, what are you doing? Don't touch it.
Don't squeeze my banana.
No one's supposed to touch the banana. I don't know you like that. That's why it has a peel. You can peel it and eat it and no one touches it.
It is the most germaphobe safe fruit, the banana.
Honestly, yes. There are certain times when I am places and it's like, hey, there's free fruit. I'm taking the banana. I am not taking the apple.
Orange, also good.
Harder, though, you need to have a good hand washing station or like a knife available.
Sure, of course. Of course. Yes,
because you're going to have to touch shit.
So the whole point of this scene is that, yes, Sarah is people and not this weird hippie monster that Ortiz has in his head.
Yes. And so she tells him not to leave, but she needs to, like, finish composing this thing. He's just enchanted watching her sing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wow, did you just, like, do that? And she's like, yeah, I don't know where it's coming from. It feels really old.
Doesn't sound very old. It sounds very contemporary.
Yeah, I don't get what she means about it feels old and ancient and shit, because it doesn't sound like that. Like, if you were chanting or something, or, like,
yeah, right?
Singing in Latin, or I don't know, but...
I mean, maybe if you do the right arrangement for the right, like, ensemble pieces, but if you're just playing that on a single acoustic guitar, it sounds like coffee shop music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Ortiz just say after she says, like, oh, it feels ancient, she's like, he's like, oh, like Pearl Jam?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's 2019, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Pearl Jam's old.
They're getting up to like 2020 by now, I think, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Watch out. So we find out that the reason she takes sea voyages instead of flying isn't to save the birds. It's because she gets airsick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's people. She's normal people.
She's normal people. And she calls him out on the fact, you don't really like my music, do you? And he's like, nah.
I'm learning. I'd like to.
He's like, I prefer when it makes my ears bleed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm like, dude.
He calls himself a banger.
Yeah, a banger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He should talk to Tony. That's his dream.
I feel like Ortiz would be a raver.
A raver?
Yeah. With those muscles?
Yeah, you want to see him with, like, the neon pacifier and everything? What are we talking?
I want to see him in with the guns out, right?
Obviously.
Mesh tank top.
Yes.
The long hair and, like...
You want to dress him like Keith from Righteous Gemstones.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do. Absolutely. And it would work so well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Speaking of exposed chests, it's time for a shower scene.
Shower time.
Shower time.
With no water.
Right, because they do. It's Sonic and Star Trek. What is it here? Like infrared or
it
something?
Wasn't infrared.
It was ionic.
Ionic.
Yes.
Yeah, the ion shower.
So we have Henderson and Smith. Implied nude, so just like
yes.
Collarbones and up, peeking up over the shoulder walls.
It's like as far down as they can go without like actually getting too risque into cleavage.
Sure, sure.
It's not just collar. Because my thing in this
it's
scene
not
is,
full décolletage, but they got to the décolle.
Is like, I would be so uncomfortable showering here because of the weird windows into each other's stalls.
They're so close together. That's the one thing that feels like a submarine.
It's
They're really
so
packed
low.
In there.
Okay, so that like that height, that where you can see in this.
Yes.
Remember that bathroom that I complained about in Central
in
Park?
In Central Park, yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
That's how far I was looking above if I stood up, is I could just see everyone. It's fucking awkward.
How much money do they save on, like, washing towels and things by having ionic showers?
They still wrap themselves in towels.
Yeah, why do they do that?
I don't know!
Why do they do that?
I don't know! To make it feel like a real shower, because they all actually hate it, and they're like, this feels like shit, but I'm gonna still wrap myself in a towel and make it pretend like it feels good.
So in this scene, Henderson is just being a catty little jerk.
Yes. She hates Sarah. Sarah's not a real musician. People write her music for her.
She's not even that pretty. What is this?
And Wendy's like, what the fuck?
What is this?
No one knows. No one knows what this is.
Like, for all that I've been saying about how Sequest Season 2 wants us to be involved with these characters, as people with hearts and feelings, and that is the top priority, that doesn't mean they're always consistent.
No.
And, like, the intent, and, you know, spoiler for Act 3 of this episode, we're supposed to know that something's up, something's wrong. But instead, it just comes off at like, oh, we're doing this now? Fuck this. This sucks.
I think, like, this scene, and then with other stuff they've done with Henderson over the season,
mm-hmm.
is why, like, she gets a bad rap as a character.
Mm-hmm.
There are times they just don't do shit with her, too. But also, like, when they do, there's several times that she's put as a character into these weird-ass situations where yes. it makes her jealous, where it makes her pushing herself on people, these awkward interactions that you're just kind of like, when you don't remember, like, that there is a reason this is happening mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it's not just her, you build up this, like, oh my god, she's just awful. Because all she's doing is, like, being jealous, thinking she's the best, and mm-hmm. wanting every man.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, if I just could go back in time with a pen, just a little bit, like, what if Dr. Smith said something like, well, it's not what you said yesterday, or like, oh, well, last week I heard you, like, listening to her new album.
Yeah, I thought you really liked her, and you were excited for her to be on board.
to give a hint that, like, something's wrong, but instead she's just like, well, that's not nice, you shouldn't be like that, which is true, but it makes it sound like, oh, Henderson is now just super jealous and just a huge jerk.
Yeah. Or she could have had a quick scene with, like, Ortiz, where, like, hey, I hear you're gonna go get her from, like, the shuttle, can I come too? Like, I want to meet her, and he's like, no, like, she doesn't need, like, something, right?
Something.
It's weird.
It's weird. I want to like you. There are times when I do.
But they make it really hard.
They make it hard.
They make it really, really hard.
Why are you putting your stuffed animal and your bridge station in the Navy ship? Don't do that. That's stupid. You should know that's stupid.
Also, all of these women have seen each other's boobs at this point. Like... there is no way to have a conversation with the person next to you without, like, full-on seeing the nudity.
If you are working on the Sequest, you are just, like, timing out showers for 3 a.m. local time. You don't want to be part of this.
No.
No.
No. So Bridger mm-hmm. is using his fog machine.
Yes. And speaking not to the professor who we know and love, but a priest, hologram smoke priest.
Yes. Who is like, hey, maybe this is all about God.
You ever think about God? Are you religious? He asks the guy who said, computer, bring me a priest. And the answer isn't, yes, obviously I called for a priest. It's, well, I suppose.
And I do like that Bridger's like, I really like to leave God as the last resort for why something might happen. We're not going to that. We're not going to assume it's God immediately.
This seems so out of place.
It's so weird. I hate it.
In real time. It makes sense for where the plot's going to go, but it hasn't gone there yet.
Yeah.
Well, and so it just seems like Bridger is deciding to think about what he thinks about religion for its own sake.
Yeah. And it's weird, too, because I'm like, again, there's nothing that's happening that would cause him to talk to a priest right now.
There is a pyramid from before time.
Yeah.
That's weird. There's weird. No logical explanation
it's
for this.
It's weird, but it doesn't make me think, God. But maybe that's a me thing.
We've had at least two kinds of aliens show up.
And it's weird that he goes to this priest. This priest that I'm like, I don't feel like this is someone that Bridger would talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the professor where it's based on, like... this just doesn't seem like someone he would get advice from, especially when the priest is all like, well, we all believe in him, don't we, in our own way? Like, no, actually we don't. Not everyone does. And I feel like Bridger would be pointing that out. Like,
instead,
actually, no.
He does the opposite. He concedes the point. He says that he believes in a unity and a purpose to the universe, and says, and sometimes I call that God.
Not everyone believes in that! But I guess it's like 1995. We can't say that on TV. It's like a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like a talking point that exists in the world. Everyone believes in something, and even if you call it something else, you're taking things on faith, therefore you are a believer, therefore you believe in God. Which is an incredibly, like... Christian-centric worldview. Like,
yes.
Not all faiths work that way on those, like, logical assumptions and precepts.
Yes. Also, there's just people who straight up do not believe at all. Like, that's not a thing.
I mean, it's a point of view you can only have when you are growing up in a secularized yet religiously founded world, which mm-hmm. is to say, for example, the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lucas is playing with his data. And
he got some of his TNG action figures from his
Yes.
His mom sent a care package.
It's not sci-fi. It's not sci-fi. We mean Star Trek. It's not Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a Wesley Crusher in box on our dining table right now.
I brought home my Wesley Crusher action figure that I never opened. I think I had two. I think I had one that I opened and one that I never opened.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I love you, dear.
Yeah, I found that and I was like, that's coming with me. I had to take it before my brother tried to like say it was his, because it's totally not his. It's mine.
I love you so much.
I love you too. What? I'm pretty sure we're going to have a battle out one day when it comes to like our Star Trek and Star Wars toys that still exist in the house. Of like who they belong to.
Mm-hmm.
I would bring all of them home and, like, set up the little diorama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Lucas is playing with his findings and readings.
Yes.
Yes.
And the activity is rising. There is an increase of 300% all of a sudden in seismic activity.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
That sounds dangerous. But not dangerous enough to cancel the impromptu concert.
Yeah, so apparently the SeaQuest has, like, a little, like, concert hall with, like, a grand piano. Like a baby grand?
Mm-hmm. Like Ford says to Ortiz at the very beginning, everyone deserves some time to relax. And while on Solitaire Island, that might be, fun on the sandy beaches under the palm trees, on SeaQuest, it's chamber music.
But it's not Star Trek, because she's playing a guitar, and yes. There's not, like, a violin.
No trombones
in sight. Or a trombone, or some shit in sight. Or cello.
That's one of my favorite running gags on Lower Decks.
Yeah.
How they just have, like, garage rock bands.
Yes.
In between all of the like, mid-century jazz.
Yeah.
Because why not? Fuck yeah.
It's so much more realistic than, like, well, we just have jazz concerts on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have how many people living on the ship and you just have jazz concerts? That's it?
Well, sometimes we do a little Mozart, mix it up.
I wouldn't survive.
So in that earlier scene, Sarah had told Ortiz, I don't mind rehearsing in front of an audience. Keeps me sharp. Keeps me keeps me honest. And he spreads the word. And so that's what this little mini concert.
Yes.
That's how it came to be.
Yes.
And it is Dagwood's first concert, I have to assume.
Yes.
He is loving it back in those benches. They set up benches.
I feel like I think those benches are always there.
They got bleacher seating. Maybe this is the chapel I've been worried about.
It doubles.
Wondering about.
It doubles. It's a chapel and a concert
this
venue.
Yeah. That piano is for when Bridger marries people.
Do you ever think that Krieg was, like, planning, like, a vow renewal type thing there. Like, it was his dream to have Bridger marry them again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Hitchcock was like, fuck no. Never got to see his dream happen.
Never got to see it. No. They're both dead now.
What? Don't say that.
They're off the show. I have to assume the characters are dead.
No!
They don't talk about them.
They're off living their lives very normally and totally fine. It's great. So, Sarah's playing her song and Ortiz is like, hey, Ford, she's so great, isn't she? Oh my god, I love this girl.
This is the best.
And Henderson is lingering in the background, being annoyed.
Even though, in this moment, Ortiz is still, like, it's not still not my kind of music.
Yeah, I don't really like this music, but she's so pretty.
Yeah.
She's so pretty, oh my god.
And it is the song she was writing earlier. This is, I guess, its debut. And as she finishes, there's an encore.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Her guitar drops, she growls, and then she starts speaking in another language with her eyes all like, I'm Annie.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like the same context. When he goes like, Quicksilver mad. So well, stage two, excuse me.
Her irises are all whited out. Are the contents.
And there's just like a pinprick of black.
Yeah. Encore performed by the demon Pazuzu. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she faints.
Mm-hmm. So on the opposite side of the commercial break, she has come to. We find her in a hospital bed. Dr. Smith is looking her over, and like, we've met aliens.
Yeah.
We've met psi demons. Whatever the Avatar was happened very recently.
Yeah.
But everyone is talking about this, like, sudden loss, the sudden transformation and gravel voice and bizarre speaking in tongues as just, you know, exhaustion. This is very normal. There's a logical explanation for this.
When he's like, so, this is why I hate her as a doctor. How's your diet? Are you stressed? You know, what language were you chanting? That was quite the baritone. You have quite the range. Like, fuck you, Wendy!
This was not a mundane incident. Like, do you think she was eating the Dead Sea Scrolls? What do you mean, how's your diet? What is this?
Fucking hate this bullshit. This is shit like this is why I also hate Wendy. Like, it's so stupid. And then, like, Ortiz comes in and is also like, oh my gosh, you're okay. Like, not going to be concerned about you being possessed there by the devil for a second. Like, it's fine. And then, like, over, like, Ford is with, like, Bridger and Lucas and O'Neill. And he's like, let's not get carried away. She's one of those music people. They, like, pierce themselves with safety pins and get tattoos. This is just, like, a publicity stunt. She fainted. It's fine.
I want to point out that in the hospital room scene, Ortiz is like, she's fine. All she needs is a, quote, cattle fanny sandwich.
Yeah.
That's illegal.
It is.
I thought we abolished the commercial beef industry. You can't say that. That's contraband.
He has connections.
CFP's connections?
He's kept in touch with Murray.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. O'Neill, of course, has recognized the language.
Well, and if you can translate Atlantean, which it's crazy they don't bring up. If you're going to find this ancient superstructure from before time, and you know that Atlantis is real, I would.
We could maybe talk about,
I would throw out the hypothesis.
Like, you know? Wow, maybe there was more than just Atlantis. Maybe
this is Atlantis. We found evidence of it. Maybe we found the spot.
Maybe this is Atlantis. Maybe it's Bolantis. Atlantis,
yes.
Part two.
The suburbs the of suburbs. Atlantis. Bolantis.
Bolantis. That's why it's much bigger and kind of boring.
That's why Atlantis collapsed. It was white flight. Yeah, once they built the highways out there, the tax base collapsed. Yeah.
Yeah, might be it. But no, we're not going to talk about it at all. O'Neill has identified this, however, as the language of the Greek myths.
Yes, very ancient Greek. Quote, the tongue of Apollo.
You know, if you believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I believe it. I'm the religious guy, so I'm going to remind you all that I am Catholic and I believe in anything that it makes me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's a pretty good line. That's an all right Catholic joke.
It's an all right one, but also, like, they're like, just, I would like to remind everyone.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
And so is the captain's computer this week, by the way.
Maybe. Did O'Neill suggest this, dude?
Yeah.
Is that it? He was like, hey, mate, Captain, you should talk to my priest.
You should talk to this digital scan of my priest.
Yeah, it will help you so much. And I would like Bridger to just walk away being like, O'Neill's fucked. Like.
So yeah, they're talking about this new theory based on the translation of Sarah's chanting in tongues, that this all has something to do with the god Neptune.
Yes.
And we're learning about who Neptune was.
And that he invented the horse.
That is a point that comes up a few times. Like, he invented the horse. He invented it. I didn't write the thing. Like, again, that's an all right gag. But the thing that gets me is, if you know one thing about Neptune, you know he's the Roman god of the sea. For the rest of the episode, they're going to be translating ancient Greek into the Roman names.
Uh-huh.
Fuck off! Fuck off, fuck you! Just a little rule of thumb. If it's the name of a planet, it's Roman. If it's the other one, it's Greek. It's not hard. It's not hard to remember.
Apparently it is. For the our buddy here who wrote this episode, who
Patrick Hasberg.
Highs and lows, man.
You
highs
wrote Whale Song! You wrote Whale Song! Whale Song had juice and had drama. What is this?
Highs and lows.
You brought us Max Scully, and now there's this.
But yeah, you know, invented horses, god of earthquakes, and Lucas is like, seismic activity.
Yep,
this is happening.
And this whole time, Ford is the ultimate rationalist here. Like, okay, she named Neptune. Is Neptune in the room with us right now? Come on, guys. Be reasonable. How many earthquakes have we seen? Have they all been Neptune? Come on!
We chased magma buoys, honestly. Come on, guys.
Pluto didn't show up.
What if it did, though?
Neither did Vulcan, the god of volcanism.
Yeah. It's not Star Trek.
It's not Star Trek.
They couldn't have that one.
No. So we're getting rid of Romulus.
Yep. Can't have that one.
Nemesis wasn't out yet, so they could have Remus. They could have one of the brothers.
That would be allowed. That would be okay. Didn't happen yet. Acceptable. Uh-huh. I love the idea that they were like, can't do that one. What about... No, we can't do that one either. No. What? No.
What if, and hear me out, what if Abraham Lincoln shows up in front of the window?
They talk about Lincoln a lot, actually, in this scene.
They do.
Because they talk about, like,
they talk about channeling.
Channeling. Like, yes. Maybe she was channeling, and Ford's like, absolutely not. And Bridger's like, hey, there's a lot of cases of channeling. There was that dude who's, like... wife was channeling like Abraham Lincoln's wife. And Ford's like, how did she like the show? Everyone's always wanted to know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We're getting like sassy Ford. We're getting jokey Ford.
He's so sassy in this episode.
Because from his very reasonable position for now, before things really go off the rails, everyone is talking like a crazy person, so he's going to laugh at them.
Yes. Yes. So while this is happening, or I guess later, it's technically later,
mm-hmm.
Dagwood is mopping the grates, and what I love is they actually zoom in on the fact he is mopping the grates.
Yes!
Because all the other times, it's been kind of, they never zoomed in, and it was always just like, yeah, he's mopping the grates, that's fucking weird. Like, did they realize that? They know! They zoomed the fuck in!
Well, this guy never directed anything again in his life.
I wonder why. And Dagwood is interrupted by a horse.
Yes.
A ghost horse.
A ghost horse.
A ghost horse comes running and neighing by down the hallway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It just appears and then passes through a wall and the bulkhead.
Mm-hmm.
And then the horse appears by the comatose serotonin.
Yes.
In the medical bay. You know what that means? There's a horse loose in the hospital.
There is a horse.
You know what that means? John Mulaney has been plagiarizing Sequest DSV for years.
Big fan. He's a big fan of Sequest.
This is where it came from. There's a horse loose in the hospital.
Yeah. So then Lucas and Tony are awoken from their slumber by very heavy knocking on the door.
Yes. It is time for some humor and heart, especially humor, as these half-asleep boys argue about whose turn it is to open the door and get out of their bunk bed.
Yes, and Tony loses and has to go do it.
They go back and forth a lot.
They do. It takes so long. And so Tony, moseys over there, opens the door, and it's Dagwood, and he's like, I saw a horse. When did Sequest get a horse? And they're like, we don't have a horse. And he's like, but we have a dolphin. We do have a dolphin.
Dagwood has convened a meeting of the Paella Boys. We move to accept the standing rules. It is time to engage in new business. Horse!
And they're like, there's not a horse, Dag. What are you talking about? And then there is Nain. And so they all go running out of the room.
Well, they're kind of hobbling?
Yeah, because they're barefoot and they're running over the grating. So they're hobbling because it hurts their feetsies. I love that this man is so obsessed with the grating.
I just love the way Piccolo, like, hobbles around. It's very good. It's very cute.
And so we go to Henderson's room, where the ghost horse visits her, and she wakes up.
I think we've talked about her being a horse girl, yay or nay.
I would think she'd be a horse girl.
Right?
She seems like a horse girl.
She had a Captain Oates growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess she's a bear girl, because she has a dumb plushie. I hate that plushie. It looks like such shit.
It's well loved. To love is to be changed.
It looks like a shitty ass thing you get from the carnival.
That could be how it started, yes.
It would not have lasted this long.
Which means it is tied to an important memory.
That thing would have, like, split a seam 20 years ago. There's no way it still has a head.
So, an apparition of a horse has appeared before Lonnie Henderson in her spacious suite.
Yes.
And she maintains from the carnivorous plants that were like dinosaurs
episode. Roy! Roy! Did Dagwood say, hey, when do we get a Roy?
We've always had a Roy, Dagwood. He was here first.
And so Henderson then turns into the ugliest fucking Medusa I've ever seen.
Well, that sort of is the point.
Yeah, but like, that is some bad makeup. It's not good. It's not like good makeup to make an ugly looking thing. That looks bad.
Yeah, it's not great. And as she frightens herself in the mirror, she then turns to face this horse, which immediately turns to stone, and then just as quickly crumbles to dust.
And she screams, and the boys rush in, and, you know, she's like, there's a horse in my room, and snakes growing out of my head, and Dagwood's like, did it hurt? No?
Which is a reasonable question. I love that Dagwood believes everything. Yes. Dagwood has never disbelieved even the most ludicrous statement.
No.
He's always in your corner.
Yeah.
So why couldn't they believe him when he said, I did not kill that man?
Good question.
Yeah.
They're like, holy shit. What's going on? Why is there so much dust in your room? Pile of sand. Giant pile of sand.
But meanwhile, Sarah is having a bad time. There's suddenly alerts flashing and alarms beeping as she's taken a negative turn in her coma.
And Ortiz rushes in and, like, I guess he's just lingering outside like a creeper.
He's worried.
Yeah. And so then we have this really weird-ass montage.
Yeah, we get a bunch of B-roll of various nature scenes. The seas, the mountains, the forests. And then we get into the historical section with a lot of famous moments in the 60s, and then World War II, and then Babe Ruth is there, and then the Age of Sail, and then there's dinosaurs.
I love the clip for the dinosaurs. Like, old black and white stop motion dinosaur shit, and it's so good.
This is all, like, free-to-use film library stuff being assembled.
Yes. And then Sarah is standing in on a shallow lake. She's standing on water. I guess she's Jesus.
She is, in reality, she is, like, in stasis of some sort. Her vitals are low. People are worried. But in her mind, she is walking on water.
Yes.
In this ancient toga gown dress.
Mm-hmm.
As a gigantic Poseidon... Not Neptune, he's Greek. Poseidon rises before her and looks down on her merely human-sized self.
He's fucking giant.
Yes.
So big. And then she wakes up, you know, speaking in the weird-ass voice again, and her eyes are all funky. Mm-hmm. And then after that stop, she's her vitals are good again, and Wendy's like, wow, I think she died. But she's okay now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thanks, Wendy. That is so helpful.
And like, everyone involved in this plot is here. And Henderson is like, whew, I'm glad she's okay. And Dr. Smith turns and is like, are you? Are you really? And it sounds like she's accusing her crewmate of murder.
As she was, you know, standing behind her. Like, wrapped up in a blanket. Like, and, like, couldn't do anything.
I understand being like, hey, you're sounding like a real asshole. Why don't you pump the brakes and just, like, we're just ferrying a VIP.
Here's
just
the chill. Thing.
Which is what she said earlier, but now, like, I know what you're up to. Nothing. She's up to nothing.
The thing that's so weird is Henderson's tone in this scene is not like, oh, thank God. It's, like, sarcastic. And she's actually like, oh, good. Yeah. I'm so glad she's okay.
Yeah.
So I don't understand.
No!
This whole, like, Wendy, like, thing. Did they write it with the intention of her saying it differently? It's fucking weird.
Is there a cut scene where she does something more than have really snippy words?
I don't know. But Wendy tells Ortiz to walk Henderson back to her room.
Because
she wants to leave. Because she's feeling better. And so while they start their little walk back, we gotta go to Lucas, who is testing sand.
Yes.
We find out that it's marble.
And this is the scene where Ford goes from rational to obstinate.
Yes.
Because, like, there is no, like, mundane explanation for how a giant pile of marble dust showed up in her room. You don't have to believe that there's a ghost horse and she turned into Medusa just in time to turn it into a stone ghost that became sand. But you can't be like, well, you know, marble's really common. That could happen at... You're in a submarine. You're in a sealed environment.
Who fucking brought it in?
Is there a lot of marble on the manifest? Jonathan, what are you talking about? Common stone.
And so Lucas is all like, well, this type of marble is very special. It's the type that's used for sculptures in ancient Greece. Mm-hmm. And it's from Marathon 1,000 years ago.
Oh.
So then we got to talk about the history of marathons.
Yes.
So they do.
They mention, yeah, the Battle of Marathon, running 26 miles to cry victory, or in the Greek, Nike.
Yeah.
They don't mention that he dropped dead.
No.
And Lucas does say that, oh yeah, and that's where the first Olympics came from. Not true!
No.
That's not true!
That's not it.
Stick to computers. Read a history book.
That's just where crazy people decided, huh, I could do that and not die. And so,
I'm better than that ancient Greek warrior.
And I could pay like $300 to do that and not die.
He didn't even know what dollars were. Fuck him! We're going to add an extra 0.2 in the modern distance just because they wanted the finish line to be right in front of Buckingham Palace or whatever the fuck in the London Olympics. Fuck you!
And I'll get a medal and a banana at the end.
Give me that banana. Do not peel my banana. I peel the banana.
I peel it. Do not squeeze the banana. I can't open the cap to my water bottle, though. My hands are so swollen. I cannot do it myself. Please crack open the beer as well. Doing God's work right there. I remember there was some race I finished. I think it was like a half marathon or something.
Sure.
It was one that was really hot. And like when they were handing out the Gatorade bottles at the end, no one could open them because it was so like your hands were swollen and they're tight and they're hard to And
was it the West Side half then?
Maybe.
The Garfield Park one?
Something.
Yeah.
But I remember there was one guy handing them out who was actually cracking them open as he was handing them out, and everyone's like, oh, thank God. Because everyone else is just like, what am I supposed to do? I can't open this thing. I am sweaty, and my hands don't work right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very important man. MVP of the day.
Mm-hmm.
While this is happening, the other boys...
Yes.
O'Neill, Tony, and Brody are in charge of the bridge.
Yes.
So that's going well.
To do the science mission to begin hollowing out this mountain that is a pyramid that is, according to their information, their readings, already hollow.
But we're going to do it anyways. Because
orders are orders.
We got things to do and check marks to make. And
It's still too heavy, even though it's hollow.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess because it's full of all that water.
Mm-hmm.
They just need a big pump.
But then, like, an earthquake happens, and there's magma and shit, and the island is, like, just about to, like, break apart, and they're like, oh man, get the captain, this ain't good.
This scene has everyone making fun of Sarah in really weird ways. Like, she is in the middle of a medical crisis, you guys.
Yeah.
Tony is making some joke about, oh, what's next? She's gonna burst into flames? And O'Neill says, ah, wish she would. What? Why are you all so mean?
Because they are.
It's so mean!
As Ortiz is walking Henderson back to her room, she becomes a fucking creeper.
Yeah! She starts talking about, you know, their celebrity guest. And the question she wants to know is she prettier than me?
And Ortiz doesn't want to answer this. So he's just like, I don't know, like, what are you on about? Like, that's weird. Like, why are you asking me this?
He's handling this like a champion. He's a hero in this episode. There's, like, deflection, like, come on, that's a nonsense question. That doesn't mean anything. And then when she won't accept that, he goes to, like, this is inappropriate. This is not how we talk about our guests. And not something that I think we as co-workers and members of the same Navy should be doing right now.
And then he's like, this is stupid.
He's like, no, you have to stop. You have got to stop. And she will not stop.
And then
she will not stop.
She kisses him, even though he's like, no, stop it. And she keeps trying. And he's like, I don't want to kiss you.
No.
And walks away. This poor man.
Yeah. Like, she eventually breaks him down to saying, just to, like, get her to stop. Yes, you are prettier than her. And then her response is, you want to come inside?
It's like, fuck no! I don't want to!
Ortiz is the only normal person on the boat this week. Okay, Lucas and Bridger are pretty normal.
They're pretty normal.
They're pretty normal. It's the normal club, the three of them.
Lucas is just really into wanting this pyramid thing to be, like, older than time. He just wants an adventure. He's like, we haven't had a good one lately. I want a good one. Give me something good. I'm lonely. I'm bored.
Yeah, his last adventure was that time he got kidnapped by anarchists, I think?
Or something.
They were definitely something.
Something. Ford and Bridger get to the bridge because earthquake's happening, and Brody is calling to evacuate Solitude. So then there's a montage with a lot of recycled footage of people evacuating.
They include the lava rift opening up in the seafloor from Higher Power, Patrick Hasberg's recent episode. So I guess what we have to do is we have to send the Sequest 2 down into that gap, explode the reactor. We know the drill. This is how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so from this earthquake, there's now, like, rock falling away from the mountain. And we are seeing that there, behind the rock, there is giant doorways with a face.
The big face with a big open mouth. And so the big face sucks the long, hard, and full of semen tube of Sequest. And I'm not going to say it's not Freudian. I don't think that's what they're going for. But it's not. Sucks it all in. And then we go to commercial with the Sequest sealed inside the hollow, gigantic mountain twice the size of Everest.
Yes.
And so, inside, everyone's looking at the screens, looking at the readouts. Dagwood's like, dang, this is a really big room. And everyone's like, yeah, man, that's right. And O'Neill says, I'm going to say a prayer. And everyone's like, yeah, man, that's what you do at times like this. We know.
Please go ahead.
Yeah. I won't, but you can put me in there if you want, big man. Yes.
Say all our names. It's fine. Just, like, whatever makes you happy.
Divine conquer. You got it.
And Henderson's like, fuck, I'm really sorry, Archie's about, I don't know what happened. I don't know what came over me.
Her subplot is so bizarre because she is constantly vacillating between this weird jealous creature,
yeah,
the creature that is Medusa, and just really normal.
Yeah, and there's like nothing that's triggering it, because like, there's nothing, yeah, in this moment that triggers her to go back to normal other than, like, I don't know, impending death, I guess?
Is the idea that it's just, like, slowly building, and when it releases in a climactic moment of what the fuck are you doing, then she's normal? Like, if you turn the ghost horse into stone powder, then the Medusa is spent enough that you can have, like, normal empathy for a sick person.
Maybe.
And also, if you sexually harass your coworker, then you can be normal about it the next time you see
it. Maybe. As they are looking at these screens, O'Neill is working to read the inscriptions on the walls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the whisker pans up on the walls, and this giant statue of a woman.
Gigantic statue.
And Ortiz is like, that's Sarah!
Yeah, not just any woman, that is the spitting image of Sarah Tonin.
And Wendy's like, yeah, that's totally serotonin. I agree. I'm a medical doctor.
But yep, translating this most ancient of Greek languages, we discover that the sequest is inside the tomb of the goddess Minerva, who like created Medusa or turned Medusa into a monstrous gorgon, more accurately, because of love triangle stuff with Neptune. Minerva and Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. It's fine.
Is it?
It's fine.
So then the water gets all sparkly,
mm-hmm,
and Neptune appears.
Neptune appears. The Sequest has met the god of the seas. And various other things, including creator of horses.
And Serotonin appears to be like, he wants me. It's why I'm here. He thinks you're Medusa, Henderson. And she's like, well, tell him I'm not. I don't, like, what?
And also, Ortiz was a little bit channeling him, Neptune. Or was Neptune? We're all doing something. All three of us are caught up in whatever this is.
And Ortiz
That's
is like,
the thing.
I'm Cuban. What?
There are good one-liners in this episode.
There's actually a lot of good one-liners. There's some good jokes. And Serotonin's just like, no, I know it. He wants us to come home. And they're like, what if we don't want to go? Like, mm-hmm, this is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So then they all go to battle stations.
Against God. A God.
And they're like, well, if he wants Minerva, let's see what happens when we give her to him.
There's a chase scene. There's an action scene. Like, Neptune grabs the Sequest and holds it in place.
Well, he tries to and misses because they're too fast. They're fast, as fuck, boy. And then he like goes back and he gets them.
He pins them down with a trident to the seafloor. Yeah,
which they somehow escape later too. It's very they are so slippery because he like grabs them twice and they get away. And then with the trident and they get away from that too later. Also, he has really good aim to not like stab through the boat with the trident. Just kind of traps them.
He's god of the sea. He's good at tridents. So
as they're doing this, though, all this is happening, they're like bombing.
They're firing
the temple.
Salvo after salvo. Now, we know it's a temple because the first thing like translated is do not defile this tomb. So yeah, fire salvo. Fire another salvo.
Fuck it up!
And they're firing not at the door to escape or at the shimmering figure of gigantic Neptune, but at that giant statue of Minerva / Sarah to destroy it and reduce it to rubble, thereby releasing the goddess Minerva from the statue in which she was entombed.
So now she sparkles in now the ocean as well.
Now she's a sparkle lady as well, yes.
Yeah.
And Minerva and Neptune gaze at each other, and they move toward each other and hold each other as everyone is watching this on the screens, and violins are going nuts. There's so many violins, you guys.
And the sequence just gets away from the trident that had trapped it in place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just suddenly fine.
It's fine.
It's all good. And then they sail away.
Sail away. Sail away.
So now that they are free, it is time for another concert. Uh-huh. And everyone is wearing their casual clothes to this one.
Well, this is after Ford stops Captain Bridger in the hallway to be like, hey, what's going to be in your official report?
And he's like, well, I'm going to, you know, say that we had this encounter.
With the god Neptune?
Ford's like, can my name not be on it? I want to run for president one day.
He doesn't say I want to. He says,
if I want to.
What if in 20 years I run for president, the press is going to dig this up. I'm going to look like a lunatic.
And Bridger's just like, I always knew you wanted to run for president. I always knew it, dude.
I'm adding this to my proposal for the current day Lego sequel.
Yeah.
It is still Ford coming back to be captain of the Sequest, but he's leaving the presidency to be captain of the Sequest. Mm-hmm. That's his most recent job, president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
That's a show. That's a hook. But yes, Sarah is rehearsing / performing.
And it's time for her ancient song that doesn't sound ancient, and everyone on the Sequest is there to watch.
It's date night.
And I don't know why she says avenue as... What was it?
Avenue.
Avenue?
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck do you say it that way?
They're bad, bad lyrics. They don't make sense.
It's weird. I don't like the song. She has a lovely voice, but it's a bad song.
And it plays for so long. It's date night on the Sequest.
Yeah.
Ortiz and Henderson are cuddling on one of their bleachers.
They've made peace, I guess.
And Bridger is, like, tapping them on the shoulder while he's getting just as canoodly with Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't like it.
Do you know where the term canoodling comes from?
No.
It comes from actual canoes.
Because you have to sit close by, so you're canoodling in the canoe?
Like, before the automobile revolution provided people with a place to make out. Canoes were the place. You would rent a canoe, just paddle out, and then get a little low in the canoe.
Oh my.
And, you know, anything can happen. You could just be eating your picnic lunch, or you could be unwrapping your partner's banana.
Or you could find a daddy long legs and jump up and down in the canoe and then flip it. I was with a lot of children canoeing this past weekend.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's a fun
one. For the first time in, like, 7 years, someone flipped a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Then some other ones. Oh, I don't know how they didn't flip the canoe. There was fucking screaming. There was yelling. There was, oh my god, there's a spider. And then other kids like, it's just a dragonfly. It's a spider. Oh my god.
It's hard to flip a canoe if you have one very attentive person in there holding it down.
This is true.
You just need one person to really, really take care of business.
You know how you flip a canoe? All three kids stand up.
Yep.
fucking in the pond.
But yeah, that's the end of the episode. Everyone is themselves again, and this ancient coffee shop song plays over an external view of the Sequest sailing away to its next adventure.
Sail away.
Except, of course, not the true end, because Don Franklin is at SeaWorld Orlando to talk to us about the lionfish.
Yes.
Known for its venomous spines used for both protection and the hunt, and they are very popular in saltwater aquariums.
Because they look fucking cool.
Because they look so dang cool, the lionfish.
So, darling, do you have a fish fact for us?
I have a god fact. Minerva! Oh,
god fact!
Minerva is the Roman goddess of wisdom, justice, law, victory, and sponsor of arts, trade, and strategy. This makes her a goddess of warfare, though with a focus on strategic warfare in particular. The Romans adopted many of the Greek myths of Athena in their veneration of Minerva, including the weaving challenge against Arachne, all that Medusa stuff, and creating the first olive tree as a means of winning the naming rights to the city of Athens. Mm. Should I ask this? Which I've got to think makes more sense when you call the god Athena.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there. However, all these sailors should recognize Minerva for being depicted on the U.S. military's Medal of Honor.
Oh.
For most branches.
Okay, most branches.
The Air Force has the Statue of Liberty.
Oh.
But all the other branches have Minerva in that place.
That's so fucking weird.
A little bit. A little bit.
Like, why?
I don't know.
That's really weird.
Have you got a fish fact, dear?
Yes. So I'm going to talk about the puffer fish.
The puffer fish.
Okay, they're...
the puffiest fish of all.
They're, like, my favorite fish, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They're so cute, I think. The majority of puffer fish are toxic.
Yes.
And are among some of the most poisonous vertebrae in the world.
They're slipping under.
In certain species, mm-hmm. the internal organs, such as the liver, and sometimes the skin, contain, the toxin.
Ah, yes.
They can, you know, very highly toxic if you eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
in 2013, a Smithsonian article talks about dolphins handling pufferfish to apparently get high.
I've heard of this.
It was in the Smithsonian.
Sure.
Okay. And this article talked about it from footage from a, at the time, new BBC documentary series called Spy in the Pod.
Okay.
That reveals what appears to be dolphins getting high off of pufferfish because they would, like, play with them and not, yeah. like, eat them like other fish. They'd, like, pass them around to each other for, like, half an hour.
They go get puffed.
It appeared was that in small enough doses, the toxin creates a trance-like state in the dolphins.
Mm.
And the dolphins, you know, were filmed playing with the pufferfish, and then, like, were just seen, like, floating in the water and, like, looking at their reflections in, like, the water and shit.
They suddenly started talking about, like, the moon and how you never really, like... Think about it, man.
And, like, the people observing this were, like, they really seemed like they know what they were doing with that puffer fish. It, like, seemed like this is something they've done before.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it's a common practice to do.
They started clicking and squealing along to Bob Marley? I don't know.
And there's other cases of other animals doing stuff where they get high.
Right.
Like, eating certain things or whatever, and they know, like, this is what's gonna happen, so we're gonna do it.
Fermented fruit is a big hit among certain, like, ape and monkey populations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Darwin leaves the boat, he's definitely going out and playing with the pufferfish and getting fucking high. And that's yeah. why he wants Lucas to swim with him so bad, is because he wants to, like, take him to the party.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Lucas will die, though.
Yes. Darwin doesn't know that. So it's a good thing Lucas has never gone.
Like, one of the fun things about Darwin is, like, when Darwin is used to point out the biases of, like, anthropocentric views by being dolphin-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And just saying, like, you are all, like, weird dolphins with legs. I don't understand how that works, but it works for you, I guess.
Yeah.
That's fun. If this is one of those times, Lucas would die of pufferfish venom.
If this show was made after that article came out.
Yeah.
There would have totally been a storyline where, like, it's Lucas's birthday or something, or he's mm-hmm, sad mm-hmm. and Darwin, like, brings him a pufferfish to try to make it, and, like, is like, "Get happy, Lucas."
Let's just vibe.
Let's vibe Let's together, vibe. Buddy. And Lucas has to explain, like, no, I'll die. What's death?
Well, light is dark and one.
Yeah. I'll take that back. Yeah. You don't get the puffer fish. No. Have some seaweed.
Yeah.
Seaweed. Medicine. It's good.
Darwin knows what death is.
And Darwin gets, like, grounded by Bridger because he got high too much. He
got too many puffer fishes.
Yeah.
He's just hiding them in all the tubes. In, like, the
little air vents. And they're like, no, I thought we cut you off. Cold turkey, buddy. He's like, no.
Darwin watches Finding Nemo and his reaction is, they shouldn't be letting kids watch this. One of these characters is just a bong. What are you doing? Anyway, that's Whiskers.
That's Whiskers. We're back.
We're back, baby. Yeah.
We're on the last disc of season two.
We are. We're on the home stretch of season two and therefore the whole dang show. If you think about it.
Don't say that.
I'm just saying.
It makes me sad.
I know. It makes me sad. We should have more months of zero availability to really stretch it out.
I can't. Anytime I get to season three, it's always this, like, bitter sweetness of, like, yay, season three. I really like season three. And, oh my god, it's gonna be over.
Oh, like sands through the hourglass. Do you remember how we end the show?
Yeah, we have to, like, say things.
That's you could also describe the beginning and middle that way.
If you enjoyed today's episode, you know what you should do? Mm-hmm. You should go leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us.
You should. You leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it out loud with my mouth words. I'm going to do it.
You should also tell a friend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Use your mouth words.
Yeah.
That's where they live.
Yeah. And then you can use your finger words by engaging with us on Blue Sky at Whiskers.
I got 2 finger words for you right here, big guy. Hey, how do you like that?
Yeah.
WSKRS.bisky.social. That's where the fun is.
So with that, I'm Lena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future. Get dolphins high.